soon, and we are accepting donations now. The sale will be held sometime this fall at the Volunteers of America building, 537 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. The book and record sale is a great way to help contribute to your community. So do us and yourself a favor. Clear out those books, comics, DVDs, VHS tapes, LPs, and CDs collecting dust around your abode and bring them down to the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, during our business hours. Got questions? Contact Jesse at 503-231-8032, extension 213, or online via email, volunteer@kboo.org. Remember, the stuff that you're sick of, others may treasure. Turn your clutter into cash for your community radio station, KBOO.
What a life. 210 days of school until next vacation.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Washington Gorge Action Program's Back to School fundraiser, August 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Columbia Gorge Interpretive Center, 990 Rock Creek Drive in Stevenson, Washington. There will be a fashion show, live music, a silent auction, and dessert social. Washington Gorge Action Programs is a multi-purpose human service organization dedicated to helping individuals, families, and communities address basic human needs. Again, that's the Washington Gorge Action Programs Back to School fundraiser, August 23rd at the Columbia Gorge Interpretive Center, 990 Rock Creek Drive in Stevenson, Washington. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Billy Rose was a lowrider, Billy Rose was a night fighter, Billy Rose knew trouble like the sound of his own name. Busted on a drunken charge, driving someone else's car, the local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some who tell the tale. I believe fought the sergeant for some milk that he demanded, knowing they'd remain the boss, knowing he would pay the cost. They saw he was severely reprimanded. Take me home, come and lay, help us lay young Billy down.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. This is Ruth Kovash. I hope some of you remember me. I did Pipeline for many years, well, at least four, and I was in Illinois for 3 years, and now I'm back in Portland, and here I am just as a co-host, a guest host tonight, and I'm appreciate all of those who continued to listen to Prison Pipeline while I was gone. I'm certainly thankful to Karen James and her collective of Peter and Justin and Stephanie and Carlos, who all carried the torch and kept Prison Pipeline going, because I think it's such an important program. It's a way of reaching out to people who are incarcerated, people who are recently released, their family, their friends, but most important, it's a means of educating people who just haven't any idea of what goes on inside a prison and what is needed by people who have rehabilitated themselves, served their time, come out wanting to be good citizens, and they need your support and your help. So I'm grateful that Prison Pipeline has continued to educate all of you. Tonight, I have a guest with me, Karen Muir. She and Harry Olson are part of Phoenix Rising Transition. I think if you've been listening to Prison Pipeline any time at all, you know what that is. But as Karen and I visit later in the show tonight, you'll learn maybe more about that even. I think that you need to know that we really try to educate folks who are not aware of the needs of a recently released person and of prison reform issues. I had a very good friend that I just said to her, well, I can't see you Wednesday night because I'm going to go do this about prison reform. She said, prison reform? What's that? And I said, well, we need to reform of so many issues. And she said, oh, well, they're in prison. What does anything have to be better for them for? Well, if you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, and if you're a friend or a person recently released, I don't have to explain that. But if you're a person that needs to hear an explanation of that, that's why we're here tonight. And I thank you for your attention. So, Phoenix Rising Transition, run by Harry Olson and Karen Muir, is certainly a worthwhile and wonderful thing. So tonight I'm pleased to introduce to you and have as my guest Karen. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Ruth. How are you?
It's so good to see you.
You too.
Can't act like I'm just seeing you. I was away in Illinois for 3 years and I came back and I was back less than 4 days and I was over at CRCI with Harry and you visiting the prisoners because I know the good work that you do. I welcome you and I thank you for your time. I know Harry would be here, but he's had a spell of, it's better for him to stay home because he hasn't been feeling well.
Right. Right.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about the early beginnings of Phoenix?
Sure. My husband, Harry Olson, was the founder of Phoenix Rising Transitions, and he had been incarcerated for about 8 years over a 15-year period. And he had been out and released into the community several times, and he kept going back. And one of the things that he realized was that there was not support for him when he got out, the kind that he thought would really help him to make a change. So the last time he got out was 1991. In fact, in 5 days, it'll be his 23-year anniversary.
In fact, I'm sure he not only realized there wasn't much support, he found out that there were a lot of challenges for people who had stereotyped people recently released from prison and not only wasn't willing to give them a chance, but they were a challenge that blocked them from getting
exactly.
back into the good life.
Exactly. And he wanted to do something other than just provide services. There are, of course, many services available for people when they're getting out, and those are really important to fulfill. But he wanted to have the kind of supportive relationship, and not just the kind of relationship from a parole officer or a counselor. He wanted to provide the kind of relationship that you would have with ordinary community members, and also the kind of support that you could get from other successful people who had gotten out of prison. So he worked very hard for many years trying to design this program, and it has ended up being what it is today.
He started this work in around 2001, is that right?
He started Phoenix in around 2001, and what he wanted to do, he had a little bit of a, he had a few epiphanies along the way toward what he wanted to do, because first he got out and he was just taking care of himself, you know, getting a job, spending time with his family, and then he wanted to start going back into the prison. So at that point, he was taking college classes, and he took one on cultural anthropology, and he had this kind of burst of insight that these were two cultures that were colliding, the prison and criminal subculture over against the dominant community culture. So he was looking for a way for there to be some interaction between those two that would help reduce the stigma that you were talking about earlier that keeps people from succeeding when they got out. So the next thing he found was community organizing, and that provided a model for him to have people who'd been in prison getting together with people in the community and having real conversations about things that were important to each one of them.
Well, that's, I think you started helping him as an all-out effort in around 2006. Would that be about right?
Yeah. I met him in 2005, and we got married. I lived in Maryland, and I had worked for nonprofits for several years, so I had some idea of how to run a small nonprofit. And so when I moved here, I started as a board member, and then I was going into the prison to teach classes and just got more and more involved. And I decided I really didn't want to work at another kind of a job outside of Phoenix. It was just really fascinating mm-hmm. to me. So that's what has kept me sticking with it for this long, is just a passion for the work.
Well, everybody who knows Harry and his work knows Karen also, because you certainly have taken an active part. And you know, I'm a little biased in this, but I think there are some things that a woman's touch and a man's touch has just its own personal attributes that it makes a good team to have one of each doing this work together, especially two people who are both so committed to the cause. And
right,
we
right.
have welcomed you for many years, and I really appreciate the fine job that you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So, Karen, I've already said welcome, I hope, but I just jumped right in and got you talking, and that's wonderful. Would you like to tell us about the early beginnings of Phoenix?
A little bit more, sure. When we first started working in the prison, well, this was before I arrived, but Harry had two professors that he was working with. They were from Portland State University, Larry Steward and Barry Anderson. They were a communications professor and a psychology professor.
Now, that was around 2001.
Uh-huh. And through them, he was able to get the first class for Phoenix at Columbia River Correctional Institution in Portland.
CRCI.
Yeah, good old CRCI. And that was a problem-solving class, so they can lump that under their cognitive restructuring in the prisons. And they did that until 2011. So they were doing that for 10 years, and they were both retired professors, and then they retired from Phoenix, so we really got a lot out of them.
Now, I've been to many CRCI meetings with the prisoners and Harry and you, and one of the important parts of all of your gatherings has been relational meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure everybody understands what a relational meeting is. Would you say a few words about that, please?
Sure. That's a community organizing term that we use, and we have one-on-one conversations. So in the classroom, we'll break people up into groups of two. We have a defined question that we ask people to think about, and it's to call out what the common interests are, the common concerns, any kind of thing that they share. So it may be that, you know, we're interested in reducing prison spending, and it might be for a variety of reasons, but we can all gather around that one effort that way. And that's just a very small example. It, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of things that we've connected on, but that's what a relational meeting is. It's very intentional. That's the other word for it, intentional conversation.
Well, I've been to many such gatherings at CRCI, and I've been in many relational, intentional meetings, and it's amazing that one of the people from the outside talking to one of the incarcerated folks who are on the inside, never met him before. The leaders, you or Harry, throw out a question, and we turn to each other and we start to talk, and you usually give them about 10 minutes. Is that about average?
10 or 15.
Maybe even mm-hmm. 15. By the end of that time, I feel like I've made a new friend, and I think they feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it's so amazing to me that they will open up and tell me in a few words some of the most intimate things about their life, and some of them that you think maybe they never even told anybody else ever before.
Right.
And
right.
I find myself doing the same with them.
Right.
And I think that's what it's all about, is you call them relational, intentional meetings. I call it just communicating. I think when a person is incarcerated for many years and all they talk to is other prisoners, they need to have that skill reviewed and warmed up for them again, so that when they come out and they have to be a part of society again, that they don't feel so awkward, that they can talk to someone besides a prisoner.
Right, and that's exactly what we're hoping will happen. And you've hit the nail on the head. There's a reducing of that stigma when two people talk, because then it really opens up our common humanity, and that's what we're looking for. The other thing that you mentioned has to do with story. Everybody has a story. We all have multiple stories, and this is an ideal place for us to share those in a way that's, in the words of the Department of Corrections, pro-social. Mm-hmm. It's a place where we can express ourselves and be taken seriously for things that we may not have any other opportunities to do.
Well, I always think when someone wants to hear the story of my life, they better have a comfortable chair, because I'm getting so old, the story of my life is quite long. But you always pose a question for them to focus mm-hmm. on during that conversation, such as, what is your future, what mistake did you make, or where are you coming from, or and so on. And it's so successful. I feel like every prisoner I've ever met in that situation has become a friend to me, and it's great. It's a great device. But also, you've helped so many recently released folks. I'm wondering, does a story come to your mind that you can share with us? We might enjoy as a solid example of this.
We have one class that meets once a week at Columbia River, and usually, I don't know, there are anywhere between 8 and 15 people in any given class. And we had a fellow who'd been coming for 3 or 4 months, and he was getting closer and closer to release. And he'd been in the California system before. He had fallen up here, so he was in the Oregon system, but didn't have any connections whatsoever in Oregon. And he was supposed to be going to another place in the state. And because Phoenix is part of a consortium that has a Second Chance Act mentoring grant, we were able to keep him in the Multnomah County area so that we could have him be a participant in our program as a mentee and as a resident in our transition house. And we found out that we needed to have a job for him, a guaranteed job. And I mean, we just never do that. We don't have a way to guarantee jobs for people. And we surprisingly had one of our connections in Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good who called a couple of days before this fellow was to get out and said, my son is opening a new job and he has need for some employees, and do you have any of the guys who would be interested in a job?
Great.
So we were able to get him a job, I mean, at the very last minute. And then we also had the support of the county to get him moved here because of the Second Chance Act grant.
Well, where were you when I needed a job? Okay.
But this fellow is just ecstatic, and he's very, very happy in the job and in his house. And so that's the kind of thing we really like to see. And he's somebody who's been in and out of prison his whole life and has never walked, you know, the straight path, you know, the community-oriented path before. So he's just really happy to be out and being in a place where he has that kind of support to make that change.
Well, I knew you'd have a beautiful story for me, and the most beautiful part about it is that I know that you and Harry have done a lot of work, give it a lot of time, and you're certainly not becoming millionaires over it. It's so much of it is volunteer and really truly from the heart. And I think that's what makes the connection between you and the incarcerated and the recently released folks, is that they know you're doing it from the heart. You really are focused on them. You're not focused on where some of the organizations and services, social services, folks who have been social service people for a long time, it's just a job to them, and they have an agenda that they go down a list of questions on. But you guys open your hearts and connect with them, which is why you're so very capable of having these relational meetings and teaching people to, within a few minutes, to connect with each other, because that's what it's about.
But the other thing is that we're able to have our own relationships with other social service organizations. Mm-hmm. So we have found some people in other places who are still very compassionate. They're not, you know, they haven't had the burnout yet. And they have been very willing to help us out for the things that we can't provide directly. So that has been a real boon. And it's a fruit of the relational culture that we're trying to establish.
Oh. Now, I know it was a long time goal for Harry to have a place that he could define as housing for someone recently released, because finding housing is one of the biggest challenges they have. A job and housing, I'm not even sure which comes first, but you certainly can't find housing without income, so you need the job. And you certainly can't hold a job if you don't have an address.
Right.
And
right.
I know there's a wonderful house where several men live. And tell me a little bit about how that came to be.
Well, actually, Harry didn't have a dream of having a house. For a long time, Harry and I both resisted having a house. And we thought, you know, that's something other people can do. We don't really need it. And then the men in our projects just kept saying, we really want a Phoenix house. And so we were planning to open one, and we were, you know, the board was meeting and going through all of these kind of boring meetings about, you know, well, what are the policies and, you know, how many square feet does, you know, are we willing to, you know, how much are we willing to pay per square foot? And a house just came, it fell in our laps practically.
Really?
And it wasn't something that we were chasing after. It's beautiful. It's in Gresham. I think that the neighbors love us. The parole officers love us. The people that we work with at some of the other social service agencies think that it's one of the nicer houses.
And you select these men that they're very well behaved, so to speak. They're truly rehabilitated. And
We hope that for most of the time. I mean, we prefer to work with people that have worked with us in prison. That's not always a possibility because, you know, people come and go and get out at different times.
Right.
And it is transition housing, so there are folks who are even really strong members of our projects that, you know, they want to get their own home sometime.
Is there a time limit how long they can live there once they get into the house?
I think roughly we say 2 years. We haven't had anybody stay past a year except for our house manager. And they're just ready to move on. You know, they get a job, they have a life, they want to do other stuff, and that's what our goal is. So we're happy and sad when they move out.
Well, and you keep in touch with most of them. I've been to gatherings at CRCI where someone will tell about their experience living in one of the houses that you helped place them in. Well, that was great. How about telling me... I was just going to say about the housing that you sometimes offer. Do they have to pay to stay there, or how does that work for them?
They have. We have a standard rent that we have folks pay, and they have a move-in fee that's not a deposit. They have a non-refundable move-in fee, and we are able to get rental assistance from them if they need it their first couple of months. That kind of assistance kind of comes and goes depending on federal grants, but we have different sources that we can draw on.
Do you charge everyone the same, or do you consider what their income is or isn't?
No, the rates are based on the size of the room. So if it's a single room, it's one price. If it's a double, it's another. And then we have this one really big room that's the one everybody wants, so they kind of can graduate up to that. So if they're you know, if they have seniority and they have a job and can afford it, they can get the big room.
And you have just one house right now, right?
We just have one. Actually, we are getting a Vista volunteer, and she's going to be joining us August 29th. And one of the things that she is tasked to do is raise money to help us open two more houses.
Oh, won't that be exciting?
So,
how many folks are in the house that you now have?
Right now, there are four, but it holds six. So it just fluctuates. I mean, it's summer. People, you know, change jobs and move at this time of year.
And they all get along with each other?
Yeah.
Is it men that you put in this house?
It's all men, so sometimes, you know, there's going to be
You haven't
rubs.
Opened it to it's, any women. It keeps it simpler to have it all men.
It's all, right. Yeah. It's all men. We are hoping to open the second two houses. We want to open another men's house and hopefully a women's house as well. So that's what our goal is. But
that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And how about this connection you have at CRCI to have these weekly meetings? Did that take a little, I won't say politicking, but took a little doing? And they didn't just say, oh, your name's Harry and you want to come into the prison once a week? Sure,
right,
welcome.
Right. It took him a while, and he went in through religious services at first. Harry has several different traditions that he is a part of, but he went in through the Sufis, mm-hmm. and he still does that really occasionally, not very often, but he was able to move that over to the Phoenix program and transition services because he had some connections of people within the Department of Corrections who saw the value of what he wanted to do, and they believed in him. And so even though it's tough for somebody who's been a former resident of these fine institutions to go back in, he was able to do that because of relationship building.
Well, anyone who knows Harry knows that he, and I think it's part of his faith system that has made him this way, he's able to talk to people, and he's never offensive. He can be firm with a released person who is not following the rules. He can be firm, but he's never offensive. He's never... he probably never gets angry, and of course I'll let that one go. But I mean,
oh yeah, Ruth, he never gets angry.
But he's certainly in control, and he has a very professional attitude. And I loved going to the CRC I meetings because they're just great. And I also noticed that when we go to those meetings, that you try to have a few guests, not just Ruth and not just people that we've talked to before, but the incarcerated folks who attend those meetings while they're still in CRCI have communication, and we have these relational meetings that we mm-hmm. talked about earlier mm-hmm. in the program tonight. They have these meetings, and it's all a stepping stone to being ready, but you get to know them so that when they are released and you're making decisions of who will we make room for in this house and who won't we make room for and so on. You're not just inviting strangers in. They're not just someone who calls up and puts their name on a list. You usually know them by then, don't you?
Right. Well, there has to be some recommendation by someone else to kind of, because we're trying to create a particular culture, the relational culture here. And if people aren't interested in that, then that kind of waters down what we're trying to do in the mm-hmm. house. Occasionally, we have had to let people in because we've had vacancies that we needed to fill. And sometimes those have worked out just great. So it's not always that, you know, that we're not letting any strangers in, but just that we are looking for people who want to work on change and want mm-hmm. to do something different, and then that enables them to fit into the house better.
Well, they fit in because when everyone in the house has the common goal of getting on the right path and mm-hmm. making a future for themselves, they serve not only as examples but encouragement to the other people who are living there.
Exactly.
And that's,
exactly.
That's certainly an important thing. Wow. Well, I really had about 10 more questions I was going to ask you, but I don't want to run over time. I wouldn't want to let you go tonight without telling everyone out there anything you see about Phoenix, if they're fundraising or if they just want to brag about some of their successes or if they're participating in any opportunity for political influence, that if you're a friend of incarcerated folks or family members, support Karen and Harry in this endeavor, because Phoenix Rising Transitions has done so much in these years. As it started back in 2001, that's over 10 years of real hard work and real contribution to the community, and I am so proud to know you. And when I first started doing Prison Pipeline, you were at the top of my list of people I wanted to have as a guest, because I knew from the community that here's a place where the men who come out have a chance to start over and are given the right encouragement. And this relationship philosophy you have, teaching people to communicate with each other, to me it's so clear when I heard about the Israelites and Pakistan people having a youth camp, and they had youths from both Israel and Pakistan in there, and they played volleyball together and swam together and ate together and just getting to know each other. And that's what you try to do with the prisoners, is to connect them with the community, because they just get to know each other, and we see each other as humans instead of statistics, especially unfavorable statistics, such as, why do I know this person? He's an ex-con, he did a crime, and, you know, there's so much more to every person.
Exactly, exactly. And so that's why you are a volunteer with us, and that's why we invite a lot of people in the community. If you're interested in coming into the prison, that's one of the main things that we do. So give us a call.
Okay, do you want to give information of how to contact you if they wanted to contribute money or time?
Sure. They can call Harry Olson at 503-866-1554.
Once more?
It's 503-866-1554.
I hope you all wrote that down.
It's Harry Olson. And you can also reach him at Harry Robert Olson, all smushed together, at frontier.com.
On an email.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Robert Olson at what?
Frontier.com.
Okay. Well, Karen, you've been a wonderful guest, and you've been a wonderful friend for many years, but I tried to keep this a little more informative than just telling you how glad and how proud I am to know you and Harry.
Thank you, Ruth.
And,
thank you.
Thank you, sir, for coming on tonight and sharing all of this with us.
It's my
pleasure.
And now
to all you folks who are listening, you know, perk up your ears and get out of your chair and support prisoners. They need your support. They need your love. They need your understanding, and they deserve it. Thank you, and I'm going to say goodnight now.
Billy Rose was a lowrider. Billy Rose was a night fighter. Billy Rose knew trouble like the sound of his own name. Busted on a drunken charge, driving someone else's car. The local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some who tell the tale. A Billy fought the sergeant for some milk that he demanded. Knowing they'd remain the boss, knowing he would pay the cost, they saw he was severely reprimanded.